E ngā rau rangatira mā, nau mai ki te pai o te Waonui. Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Miriana Johnson ahau. Coming up on te Waonui, the government's ambitious new plan for water causes concern for hapū and iwi. New research highlights the serious barriers faced by Māori and Pacifica children when trying to access primary health care, and the dates for the next 30 years for the new Matarihi public holiday have been released. But first, a senior Māori community leader says Oranga Tamariki is failing children and creating more issues than it is solving. The agency is under investigation after a video emerged of a child being physically abused at a care facility in Christchurch. Lady Tureiti Moxon, who took the government agency to the Waitangi Tribunal over its treatment of Tamariki Māori, spoke to Marnie Dunlop about the news Oranga Tamariki will temporarily close the Christchurch Care and Protection Residence.
Well, it just goes to show that it's time for transformational change. And we're ready. New Zealand is ready. And I want to say that it's a wise decision that Tāwhiri has done. And thank goodness there was a decisive action right behind it. And I'm just very pleased about that. And it's time to change it, just as Judge Beecroft has said. But more importantly, it's time for us to look at different models that are going to be more conducive to keeping families together rather than splitting them apart.
Why do you think it took such a raw video like this to create such significant decisions and changes in such a short and rapid space of time?
Well, since the video that came out in Hastings about the uplift of that baby, All those months ago, things have been changing. The wheels have been turning. This is not one isolated incident. There are many incidents like this. These kinds of facilities have been behaving like this and being very, very negative towards us, towards our children, our rangatahi, forever, for years and years and years. So I think that with Tāwhiri in there, with the minister, as things have been been progressing, they are ready for change, and I think the whole of Aotearoa is ready for change, and we can't carry on, because there'll be lots of more videos like that all over the place. Mm. The thing is, it's just never come to public eye.
As the government unveils its ambitious new plan for water infrastructure reform, hapū and iwi are worried their voices won't be heard in the four mega agencies that have been proposed. One example is rural Māori in the north, who say they already pay for water services they don't receive, and that's not likely to change under the Three Waters model. And there's a warning the move towards centralisation will leave some hapū high and dry. Anei takupūrongo. The Three Waters system would take the control of drinking, waste and stormwater away from 67 different councils and into the hands of four entities. In Te Tai Tokerau, many Māori communities aren't connected to the regional drinking water supply or the wastewater system. Ricky Houghton runs a social housing agency, He Korowai Trust, in Kaitaia, where he says 90% of people don't have connected drinking or sewerage systems. They have their own water and septic tanks and have to pay to have waste removed every few years. He's not happy Auckland and Northland will be lumped together in one group under the plan changes.
I don't want to subsidise anybody in the middle of Ponsonby that chooses to live in Ponsonby and not care about the water. But what's going to happen is that they're going to amortise the cost across the board and take an average. And if we're managing our water and we're not even using it, I don't see why we should be charged.
He says they'd likely be waiting another century for connected water. An hour and a half's drive away in Omanaya, a small settlement of the Hokianga, Dallas King says sewage is being pumped directly into the harbour. She's hopeful there'll be some improvement under the new plan, but is worried locals won't be heard.
When you're in the mix with other bigger, much more demanding communities who have, through a process of scale, what will be considered in this type of entity as higher needs, high demands, we're going to be way down the list, and that's really worrying for us.
She says the new plan lacks strong provisions for iwi and hapu to have a say on the design of the new centralised system. This was recently raised by Ngaitahu after the political debate over a new South Island water entity where National claimed iwi would get 50% ownership. Ngaitahu Fresh Water Group Chair Dr. Tamairi Tau says they simply want to help design the structure and share governance responsibilities. Local Government Minister Nanaia Mahuta has now confirmed water assets will remain in public ownership and be governed by an independently appointed board. She won't guarantee mana whenua representation on the new boards.
At the partnership level, in terms of governance oversight, I think that's entirely achievable. But let's be very clear, that is two steps away from the directors that are required to have the requisite skill set to be able to undertake the governance of these water service entities.
Despite this, ACT leader David Seymour insists water infrastructure will be co-governed with iwi, something he's opposed to.
Well, I'm responding to the speculation of what they are going to do. Obviously, you're allowed to comment on policies before they happen, also after they happen. The ACT Party's position is very clear that I don't think that co-governing water management is going to make the water flow any better or cleaner.
Māori Party co-leader Debbie Ngāre Wapeka has major concerns about the centralised approach.
It's not something that's matching what Māori are doing. Māori themselves within the iwi are decentralising into more hapu whānau-centric. So yeah, we could be at a crossroads and where we're going. And I think that's probably some of the tension that we need to make sure is represented in the feedback on this kaupapa.
She says hapu and iwi need to be involved in the decision-making. A Māori advisory group will sit alongside the Crown entity Taumata Arowai, which is now the drinking water regulator with oversight of the wastewater and stormwater systems. New research has highlighted the serious barriers faced by Māori and Pacifica children when trying to access primary health care. The report was based on an analysis of the University of Auckland's Growing Up in New Zealand data. Access to appointments, location of services and travel costs were some of the barriers that were highlighted. Our reporter Te Ariwa Rolleston has more.
Lack of equal access and treatment in the health system is well proven. Yet despite the government working towards what it calls transformational change, a new study shows that Māori and Pacifica children are still bearing the brunt of system failures. Infants as young as 1 to 4.5 years old are at the centre of the new report, further exposing wide health inequities. Lead author of the report, Dr. Mona Jeffries, says it is deeply concerning that children are paying the cost.
I find it really, really concerning. Think about the age of these children. They're 4.5. Most of them will be having health issues that are repeated. So they're things like respiratory issues, skin conditions, those are the most common reasons for being hospitalised.
Access to appointments followed by needing after-hours care or not having transport are barriers. There can be extra costs for non-standard visits or children not enrolled at a practice. And there are further expenses for travel and parents getting time off work. Dr. Jeffries says these barriers have major health, social and financial implications. She says primary health organisations should ensure all children who come in for care are enrolled with a practice to qualify for free GP visits.
If you're starting school already having been hospitalised, the chances are you're going to be hospitalised again, and that's going to have a huge impact on their education. It's going to have a huge, huge impact on the families. And of course, it has a big cost implication for the health system. The cost of being hospitalised vastly outweighs the cost of providing GP care or primary care.
Te whānau o Waipareira Chief Executive John Tamihere says in rural areas, the disadvantages can be even worse. He wants funding and services to be pumped into communities and self-run.
We have to change our health model and declutter it and make it more user-friendly. And we've got mobiles ready to go to service our mothers and babies at our decile 1, 2 and 3 schools. We would run those mobiles in the western region, and we're trying as hard as we can to get that negotiated process through all the powers that be that drive the present health system.
GP and Professor of Hauora Māori at Otago University, Dr. Sue Kringle, says the nature of some care rings alarm bells.
Very interesting to me that Māori and Pacific whānau reported more barriers to care more of the Māori and Pacific whānau reported higher number of visits, and yet they still had more hospitalisations. And so my question is, what's going on in the delivery of care of those services?
Dr. Kringle says more specific research is needed.
Those children who are going to services despite the barriers, do we have to have a look at what's going on in their healthcare to understand why they're also ending up having more hospitalisation?
Dr. Jeffries says any changes must align with contemporary interpretations of Te Tiriti o Waitangi to ensure health equity becomes a reality. In a statement, the Ministry of Health says COVID-19 has made addressing barriers more challenging. It acknowledges more can be done to improve health and well-being for the young and says work to improve this is underway.
E ariari mai ana ngā tāringa ki Te Waonui. You're listening to Te Waonui, a wrap of the week's Māori news here on RNZ National. I'm Mirianna Johnson. Police have no idea how many photographs of Māori youth are stored in its intelligence database, but continue to insist officers are not racially profiling them. In March, RNZ revealed police were approaching innocent rangatahi, photographing them, collecting their personal details, and sending it all to the police database NIA. Police spokesperson Chris De Watner says police don't know how many photos of Māori youth are stored in the database. He told our investigative journalist Taniwa Hurihanganui analysing the ethnic data in NIA would require a huge amount of work and would still not be enough to prove racial profiling was occurring.
Well, it's my belief that you need to look at multiple sources of information. Something we've done in the past in policing, worldwide, is just looked at statistics, and you actually need to balance that with what I would call qualitative data, the actual stories, people's real stories, and almost bundle everything together, which would give you a richer picture of whatever you're looking into.
But surely a starting point would be who is being photographed, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, absolutely, and it's absolutely worth looking into. It's going to require us to think a little bit more laterally and commit some fairly significant resources if we want to provide that level of confidence in what's in the system. And going back to what I spoke to with Corin, the racial profiling element, I don't believe that the data is actually going to show that.
And just going on the initial story about the youth photographs that we published in March, you told Morning Report that, and I'll quote you on this, you said, "I don't believe that there's a systemic approach to taking and noting from Pacifica or Māori. The database would indicate that's a relatively colourblind approach." Why did you say that if you actually have no way of knowing at this point?
I think what I was trying to say at the time was, because it was in the context of racial profiling, is that I don't believe that the data would answer that question of whether there's racial profiling happening out there. The reason being that a lot of our intelligence notings come out of interventions that we've had with the public where we have been called to a particular event or a scene or a job, as we would call it. And we don't select who we're going to see or speak to or intervene with on the case in relating to their ethnicity. And I think the experiences of some of the people who you've spoken to have clearly felt it was because of their ethnicity. And again, I don't deny that experience. I'm just not sure that our database would show that racial profiling by ethnicity happens in New Zealand based on that sort of data.
You also told Morning Report that police officers need the informed consent of a person before their photograph is taken, especially if it comes to a young person. From your knowledge, are police officers seriously getting the written consent of young people that they've photographed for intel?
I couldn't say for sure at this stage. We've spoken to staff in districts and there seems to be a variable understanding of that requirement. But again, that's only an area for improvement for us. And I think that what our review has showed us is we need to be far better at highlighting the importance of informed consent from our young people.
So at the moment, there's no way you can monitor whether a police officer is getting the written informed consent of a person that they're photographing?
I don't believe there's anything that we could search for in the data that would confirm that.
Okay, so it's up to the goodwill of the police officer to actually follow that requirement.
Like any policy in police, we expect our staff to know it, but we have a lot of policy. It's really a case of these things are really, really important. We actually need our people to understand the requirements of taking photographs of youth outside of the arrest summons type situations.
That was police spokesperson Chris De Watner speaking to Te Aniwa Hurihanga Nui. An iwi leader says the proposed replacement for the Resource Management Act doesn't put Māori at the decision-making table. A provisional draft version has been released, which strengthens environmental protection and obligations under the Treaty of Waitangi, meaning decisions must give effect to Te Tiriti o Waitangi. Marnie Dunlop spoke to chair of the Freshwater Iwi Leaders Group, Rukumuana Schaufhausen.
It doesn't go far enough. I think there is still more to be done to ensure meaningful engagement between the government and the iwi leaders. While there's provision in the exposure draft for decision making for a role on planning committees at a regional scale, again, it's positive for iwi and hapu, but we're yet to see a clear role at that national decision making level. The issue of addressing iwi and hapu rights and interests in freshwater, that continues to be an outstanding issue, which again is going to be critical in the next phase of the reforms around governance, management and allocation. So, you know, I acknowledge the improvements, but still some way to go.
So what will you be doing to ensure the government does go far enough?
So what we'll be doing, the Freshwater Iwi Leaders Group, is preparing an issues paper and submission template that we will consult and circulate to all our iwi chairs, and we're hoping to hold, we actually will look to hold a hui at the end of August.
Manawa mai ea te pūtanga o Matariki, manawa mai ea te āriki o te rangi, manawa mai ea te mātahi o te tau. Happy Matariki and New Year, everyone. This week saw the first day of the Tangaroa lunar phase of Te Tahi o Piripi, the first month of the new year, which means the constellation Matariki is visible in the sky. Midday Report's Marnie Dunlop spoke to chair of the Matariki Advisory Group, Dr. Rangimā Tāmua, about the meaning of the new year.
Matariki is visible at the moment in the morning sky. It really became clear from about 10 past 6 through to about 6:40 this morning. And it's quite high and it was quite clear this morning. So it's in the sky and people think, oh, so it's time to celebrate Matariki. Well, we're very close. But how I understand it works is you're really looking to triangulate three things. Where the sun is rising. So the sunrise gives you season. And it's rising towards the north, so we know we're in the winter. The pre-dawn rising of certain stars like Matariki give you month, or they give you pretty much activity. So it's telling us we're about the time of the new year. But you've got to wait for the correct lunar phase to give you day. So sun plus star plus moon. And tomorrow morning, the last quarter moon will rise, Tangaroa Mua. It comes into the most prosperous time of the Māori lunar calendar, and it's across these three gods that are Māori traditional gods where we get all our sustenance and food from. So Tangaroa, freshwater, saltwater, Tāne, god of the forests, and Rongo, the god of the gardens. And so when those moon phases, which begin tomorrow, are in alignment, Matariki's in the morning sky, sun's in the right position, that's when we begin our New Year celebrations.
In terms of how we should be marking it, what will be happening and what should be happening tomorrow?
So traditionally our ancestors would mark it by having what's called a umu kohu kohu whetū, or they would cook food for Matariki. They would cook food what's called a hautapu. Hautapu is a food, like a food source that had been, I guess, separated out for the gods. And it was fires and cooking food in ceremony was really, it's right throughout Polynesia. And big part of traditional Māori society. So What they would do is they would climb somewhere high where they could clearly see the star cluster. They would cook the food in the ground and they would gather food from that region that are connected to the various parts of the environment, freshwater, saltwater, the forest, the gardens, cook it in the ground. When Matariki rose, they would conduct a ceremony that's in three parts. Number one, they'd read the signs of the year. Because of the way that Matariki appears, its brightness, its clarity will determine, you know, how well your vegetables are going to grow and how much rain you're going to get through the season. Then the second thing they would do was call out the names of all of the people who have departed since the last rising of Matariki. And it's that final farewell to the year of the dead. It's a very moving part of the ceremony. And then the final thing is they take the top off the oven. The steam rises into the sky and feeds Matariki. We conduct karakia, various incantations and prayers to honour the various stars in the cluster to open a new year.
And you can listen to the extended interview with Dr. Rangi Mātāmua on our website. The first public holiday for Matariki will be on the 24th of June 2022, next year. And all the proposed dates for the next 30 years for the Matariki public holiday are now online. And that's Te Waonui for this week. Kei tō mātou whārangi ipurangi, tō mātou pūrongo, hei kimi mau, kei raro I te tāpanga, te ao Māori. You can find all our stories on our website, rnz.co.nz under te ao Māori. Noho ora mai, tēnā koutou, katoa.